What's the most important resource that you have? If you really thought about this deeply, I think you'd come to the same conclusion that Joey and I did. It's time. In our newest book, What's Without Wall Street, The 3 Steps to Financial Freedom Through Passive Income, we talk about how are we tracking that time? What is the thing that we can do to get more of that time back?
That's right. If you've ever been listening to our podcast and thought, man, it would be amazing if I could take all the things that you guys have learned over the last 10 years and just summarize them, put them in some way to easily digest them and take action, that's what this book is all about. You're not going to want to miss it. Go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/newbook and get your copy today.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Welcome. This is the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Your host, Joey, the Italian Stallion Murray, joined as always by Russ, the idea guy, Morgan. Car washes, for crying out loud, Russ. When was the last time you had your car wash?
My car wash, probably about 3 weeks after I bought it.
Well, from the looks of it, I was willing to bet, but I had to ask.
Well, when you live off a gravel road like I do, it's hard not to want to wash it all the time, because I do, because it's dusty.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, man,
it's kind of self-defeating.
Day and a half later, it's done. So, I mean, unless you're going to wash it like 5 times a week, in my shoes, you just don't wash it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've never been a car washer. I don't know what it is. It just never has been a priority for me. But I know people are crazy about car washes. Seems like more than ever.
Well, when you do go, you know that because you're already sitting in line to go through the little, you know, checkout window, right? To be able to run your car through there. I know my kids want to be in there because it's like the little monsters like sucking the car in. I mean, you know, like when they're really little, they start getting scared. They're like, no. And as they get older, like, let's go to the car.
Well, now they made it rainbow colored soap and everything, and the lights in the background. Little DJ in there, like, no, there's no DJ.
But. Well, you can do that for yourself. And I want to know this. Like, so there's like 7 different levels, Joey.
Yeah.
Are you the basic wash? Are you going all the way to the top? You doing the ultimate? Or are you somewhere in the middle?
Most of the time, I'm the ultimate. I mean, really? Most of the time, I'm like, okay, I've been holding out for years.
You go give the Abby, just give her the pampered treatment, like the little Abby, bit like.
He's talking about the Avalon. Y'all may have heard us talking about the 06 Avalon that Joey has been just sporting for a while. That thing is, like, the paint is coming off the roof, I think, because I went with the ultimate car.
Well, I mean, it's sort of like the car. I mean, most of the people driving it are balding already because they're 80. So, I mean, I think that they normally try to match the car to the individual. It's like the personality of it. Mm. I mean, I'm waiting for the Abbey to just give up. It is like
the white flag.
Yeah, it has done its duty. Yeah. All right, so why are we talking about car washes? This is a sort of random.
Well, it's because people are interested in passive income sources. They want to know, what kind of things could I be investing in? And car washes have come on the map, and they are – apparently, a lot of people are investing in them now. It's almost gotten to be saturated.
Well, there is definitely a lot of interest. And we say passive, but we were interviewing Jim Dudley, somebody who had bought and sold many car washes over the years. He really quickly said, no, just like most things, this is not that passive, pretty active.
Absolutely. So we did learn a ton from our interview with Jim. He's an expert. Over the last 15 years, he's owned and sold tons of these. He's learned the hard lessons. I think you're going to really enjoy hearing just some of the leadership things that he took away. I mean, that was impactful to me.
Well, I learned several lessons. One, if somebody asks you what something costs, go high, because you look like the dummy in the room. When there's only 3 people, it's pretty quickly the finger was pointed at me. But yeah, I think I took away from this is that, you know, this story that you're going to hear about somebody who started a business with a family member, it became really successful. They own, I think, five at one time, but that was buying and selling several along the way.
That's right.
And these things aren't inexpensive. These are like $5, $6, $10 million businesses, each individual one, and they operate as a business. He had them all over the Southeast. I learned too is what that looks like later after you've sold a business. And now you're sitting in the position of someone who now is trying to figure out what the next step was. I love that part of this interview.
Absolutely. So I'm telling you, this guy is a fantastic friend and also businessman. I think you have a lot to learn. Why don't we just go ahead and jump straight into the interview with Jim Dudley? Have you been listening to our podcast and wondering, am I the only person that knows about infinite banking? Or what about the five pillars of Wealth Without Wall Street? How can I learn more? Now is your chance. You can join the community that is learning this across the country.
Go to community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com where you can access Q&As with all our podcast guests and live group coaching with some of the top experts from across the nation. And yes, I'm throwing in the stallion and I in that. Community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. Sign up.
Welcome into the show. We have Jim Dudley as our guest today, man. So glad to have you on the show.
Well, thanks, guys. It's really good to be here.
Jim, I learned early on, if you want to be a cash flow investor, you need to be in one of three things: self-storage, laundromats, or car washes. So you're the car wash king. Let's hear it.
Yeah, well, it took me a while to figure out how to make cash flow in the car wash business, but I figured it out, and it was a good 15 years.
So tell us a little bit, how did you get into that space? What was appealing to you, and what was it that made you say, man, car washes is where I'm going to dive in, and this is where I'm going to spend my majority of my time?
Yeah, well, it's funny, if you would have known me before I got in the car wash business, I wash my car maybe once a year.
Outside of when you first buy it, right? Everybody washes it like every week for 3 weeks and then never again.
Well, Jim, you know, I did know you before the car wash business, and I was shocked to hear that my friend Jim was getting into car wash. Like, I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, that's the guy that always had a dirty car. And, you know, so I never dreamed of car washing. So a short story about how I got into it was, I graduated from Stanford University, and I went on staff with Canvas Outreach for a couple of years. But toward the end of my time with Canvas Outreach, I started figuring out, I felt like God had wired me up more to be in the business world than to be in full-time ministry. And I'd read some of Tim Keller stuff, and it really just kind of freed me up to kind of make that jump and understanding that all life's worship, and, you know, I could be a light in the business world. And so so I started looking for opportunities, and my dad had owned his own business. My sister's husband owned his own business. And I think just kind of being a business owner, entrepreneur has just kind of always been in my blood. But I wasn't really thinking about starting anything. I was interviewing with a commercial real estate firm. I'd interviewed with a financial services firm, and just really trying to figure it out. And then my sister's husband was in the convenience store business at the time, and he had about 60 convenience stores, and came to me one day on a family vacation and said, hey, man, there's this new car wash I've seen. And he basically said, I've got the time or I've got the money and not the time to build it. And I said, well, hey, I'm looking for something, and I've got time and not the money. So I think we could really make a great partnership here.
Joint venture, if I ever heard one.
And so anyway, so back in 2004, he and I decided to go into business together and start building car washes.
So neither one of you had your dad nor him had owned car washes before. So this is a new to everybody, right?
Well, my brother-in-law, the name of his convenience stores were called Cowboys. I don't know if you've back in.
Oh, yeah.
They got bought out back in, you know, around 2007. And I think they switched over to Kangaroos. But he had kind of the older model car washes, kind of the automatics that you saw.
Yeah.
The car just sits still and the little machine kind of goes around it. But he had just kind of seen this new model of, back then, it was a $3 car wash with free self-service vacuuming. And he just knew that those were going to put his car washes out of business, basically.
Right.
So he wanted to start building them our initial plan was we were going to start building those with his convenience stores. And then about that time, a big organization called The Pantry came in and bought him out. But then he said, hey, let's just do some standalone car washes.
And so when you say car washes, you guys kind of built the ones that are like what you just said, where you drive through it, you get the wax, everything thrown on there that you want with all the upgrades, and then you go out and you vacuum it for free for yourself.
That's right. And that's called an exterior express model inside the car wash industry.
Okay. So walk me through this. You're looking at the outset of this whole venture, and you're thinking, like, are you thinking at any point I want this to become a passive business, or was this just like, hey, I need to do something with my time? This sounds like a good venture. What were you thinking at that point?
When I first started out, I mean, you know, I think I'm probably like any entrepreneur. I was partnered with my brother-in-law who had just sold 60 convenience stores. And so I think he and I both were pretty optimistic that we could build this up and scale it and maybe turn around and sell it one day. I never really thought of it as a passive income, but I was the operator. He was the investor. So for him, I'm sure it was a passive investment. I mean, he wasn't involved at all. He just invested in a young guy coming off staff of a college ministry with no business experience. And I joke with him all the time. I said, man, what were you thinking? You know, and obviously was really grateful for that opportunity. But so for me, it wasn't anything about being a passive income. I was all in. And I think over time, I was able to get to where I wouldn't say it was ever passive, but I got to where I hired the right people and it got to be where I could really spend time other places.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of those early days. You guys are out there, you're building some locations. You're like you said, you're working hard. I mean, you're the one that's probably putting in a lot of the sweat equity as he's been putting in the money. What were some of those first kind of challenges or hurdles that you guys faced as you went from maybe one store to two stores to five stores? What were some of those first early obstacles?
Well, for us, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. We didn't really have the best growth strategy. I would do it completely different at this point. But so we built our first one in Stockbridge, Georgia, which is just south of Atlanta. And then my brother-in-law owned a piece of property in Montgomery, Alabama, that he was going to build a convenience store on, but then couldn't because he sold and had a non-compete. So we built our second store in Montgomery, and then one of us had the bright idea to build a store in Orlando, Florida, and then we built one in Tampa, Florida, and then we built one in Kennesaw, Georgia. So
you guys are bouncing all over the place.
Man, we were just like, we might as well have just been taking darts and throwing it at a map and building car washes. I mean, there was some thought that went in behind the Florida transition, but I think that was one of the challenges is just me being in Atlanta trying to operate stores that were a good ways away.
And as the operator there, you're obviously, how many people does it take to run one of these car washes?
Well, so if you're just looking at one location, I mean, a lot, everybody's hourly typically other than the general manager and assistant manager. So depending on if you have a bunch of college students that want, you know, 20 hours a week, or if you have people that want to work more full time, I would say you're looking at anywhere from 8 to 12 people per location.
Yeah. I mean, okay. When you're dealing with, you know, that hourly worker, you're probably having a little bit of labor issues there. I can imagine that's the most reliable person on a regular basis. So, I mean, did you guys battle that trying to find systems and processes to make sure you had the right people in place to help, you know, cover the guy that doesn't show up?
Yeah. You know, I think initially, I don't know, maybe a year I was involved in kind of the day-to-day hiring, maybe not even. I mean, early on, the great friend of mine who you guys know, Garrett McCarty, he worked with me. And I mean, he was a huge asset. I mean, having a guy like that with me from the beginning that had the ownership mentality, I mean, it was just a game changer. And so really, he did a lot of the day-to-day hiring until we got to the point to where we had multiple stores. And my philosophy always was, and I got this from my dad, I mean, my dad just said, look, you know, hire people smarter than you or better than you and let them do their job, you know. Yeah. And it took me a while to get to that point. But once I started focusing on hiring the right general managers, then everything else flowed down from that. Mm.
A lot of wisdom there. And every different store would have a general manager, or would a general manager manage multiple stores, assuming they weren't in a, you know, a Southeastern region there?
Every general manager had its own store.
Okay.
Car washing requires a lot of hands-on time and energy. I mean, there are so many moving parts in that tunnel. Soap applicators, you got motors and hydraulics and customers you have to deal with. And so there are companies out there that try to split managers, and maybe it would work if they were a lot closer. I mean, all, you know, even in Atlanta, to go from one store to the next for us was an hour.
Yeah.
That's with no traffic. So we just always had a GM per store, and that just always worked really good for us. And
well, that sort of seems like, I mean, I'm just thinking about it, not knowing the model. You're going to spend a lot of money buying the land, right? Because location, location, location is everything in real estate.
Absolutely.
Then you guys got to build a top-notch facility on top of that, and then start drawing people in. Yeah, you got to have a general manager and then the hourly workers to go there. So I'm seeing you outlay a ton of money on the front end. Walk me through the mechanics financially. How long does it start taking for you guys to get cash flowing and start getting some of that back?
Well, so, you know, what would you guys guess it would take all in investment to open a car wash?
I'm saying land and equipment, you're probably $500,000 to $750,000.
I'm guessing closer to like $2 million.
Yeah. So if you wanted to build, if you wanted to buy a piece of property, I mean, a good acre of property now is close to $1 million.
I was way off.
You're looking at about.
This is the Price is Right. I already won.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, no, we had seen yet.
You, an equipment package is about $1 million. Construction is about $1.5 million. I mean, you're looking anywhere from the ballpark of $3.5 to $5 million, just depending on requirements from the city to just what kind of building you want to build.
So basically, I said $1 on the prices right there. I lowballed it just so that I wouldn't go over in case Joey did. I still lost the package. All right. So
I learned to ask that question early on because people would come in when the concept is really new and they're like, oh man, you know, like I live in Macon. I'd love to build one of these stores, you know, and I'm like, well, how much do you think it costs? And they're like, oh, $500,000, you know, and I mean, even back then, early on, it was the first one we built was 1.7 all in. So, I mean, that was 2005. So just, I mean, it's more than tripled in cost to build the exact same thing over the course of 15 years. But
well, that's, I mean, it's just amazing that you said that the land itself is $1 million. And I can imagine if you're buying in Orlando or Atlanta, I'm just thinking in some of these small towns, the Kennesaw, Georgias, the Montgomery, Alabamas, the places that you're buying a little outskirt spot. But yeah, you don't think about how expensive just the land is.
Dirt.
And I should have been smarter on the actual, that car wash equipment isn't cheap. You know, when I'm sitting there, you know, slinging it around, trying to vacuum out the truck or whatever, I guess I probably don't give enough credit for all the plumbing and stuff that goes into making that work.
There's a lot more than people realize, you know, and going back to the land, I mean, that I'm sure, as you guys know, that's the most important decision because you can't just pick up and move down the street once you think. So you've got to get it right. So to go back to your question, how long does it take? I mean, it really depends on the location. The interesting thing about this model is whether you're washing 5,000 cars a month or whether you're washing 15,000 cars a month, your operating expenses really don't vary that much.
Right.
Because it costs the same amount, you know, your mortgage, your rent, whatever you want to call it. It's going to be pretty much the same. Your payroll is going to be close to the same, your power bills. So, I mean, those are kind of some of the big, big expenses. The only things that really go up as you wash cars, are your chemical and your water bill.
Right.
And so, I mean, I've had stores break even or make money from the day we open. And then I've had stores, really just one store that took about 6 months to kind of get it to making money.
Wow. But that's an amazing model. I mean, that's a pretty fast pace when you think
He's not saying that it's now paid for itself.
Yeah.
You made $3.5 million in the first day.
No,
I know that. Joey's sitting here like he knows I'm dumb, but I'm not that dumb.
Well, he heard you guess the $500,000.
Okay, exactly. Fair enough. We back off that statement. Give me a little credit. I mean, I'm an idiot. All right, so it takes you at most, 3 to 6 months to get it cash flowing, and now this thing's working. Give me some of like the challenges of now managing this thing as a whole. Is it just the marketing aspect that you're trying to make sure you have enough cars coming in there? How much is there a lot of competition in this space? What are those big challenges once you're up and running?
I mean, now there's competition big time. Yeah. Early on, I mean, there really wasn't, but I think as more and more people kind of learned about the numbers and the EBITDA percentages, and I mean, just the fact that you're really managing 8 to 10 employees, it's not a big cash business. There's not a lot of accounts receivables or even inventory. So, I mean, but recently private equity has started getting in the space, and that's changing the game. And now you're starting to see people build across the street from each other. I've got a friend in Nashville, Tennessee, a guy bought the property next door to him. I mean, they share property line, and the guy built a brand new one right next to him.
Wow.
I think it's going to be interesting to see where the industry ends up in 5 years. I mean, I won't say it's oversaturated at this point, but it seems like it could be heading that way. So that's really kind of one of the things that drove me to kind of make an exit is the multiples were the highest they've been. I had a great opportunity to reinvest in the company that bought me. And then just the fact that competition is just, who knows, man, you could have a store that's worth $6 million and then somebody builds a mile down the street and they take 30%. Next thing you know, it's worth $4 million. In a matter of 6 months. Wow. It's getting really competitive.
And just for those of us that don't know the whole story, what was the most stores that you owned at the peak?
The most I owned was 5.
Okay.
And then that was back in 2012, and I bought my brother-in-law out that year, and then I sold 2 in Florida. I bought 2 more in Atlanta, and then just kind of sold and bought a few more over the course of the next few years.
Well, so now you've transitioned, you've completely sold out, right? I use that term sell out.
Yeah.
this is a great situation to be a sellout. And this, like you said, you sold at the top of the market, which is one of the things that very few people do. Most people buy at the top of the market. They were like, oh man, car wash sounds like a great idea. Jim made tons of money off of that. Let's go buy 5.
Let's do it. Yeah. Now's not the time to be going to buy car washes. It's hard to compete with the private equity money.
Yeah. And that's where we're seeing that. So now you're sitting in a position, and we've done a podcast on this and other things where opportunities find cash. So now you start trying to figure out what else to do, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. I was hoping you guys might tell me today while we're, talking, but I think that's been one of the harder things. And thankfully I'm in a position where I don't have to figure out something quick, which I'm really thankful for. And I was talking to a guy that was an angel investor back in probably February. And man, I was stressed out because it had been almost 6 months since I sold, and I was putting all this pressure on myself to figure it out. And, he talked to me about, he's in his mid-60s. Over the course of his years, he had mentored a lot of guys and even sold or started and sold some businesses himself. And he said, he kind of breaks up lives in like 20-year stages. So the first 20 years, you're in school and doing education. The next 20 years, you're kind of, for me anyways, I was building a business and building a family. And so here I am, I just turned 42. I'm kind of starting the next 20 years phase of my life. And he said, man, don't put pressure on yourself. He said he has seen it takes about on average 2 years for people to really figure out what's next. And so that helped me just to kind of sit back and say, I don't have to figure out what's next. I mean, I think a lot of that pressure just comes from, I don't like not having something to do. I've found constructive ways to spend my time. But then also, I mean, the first question you get from people when they find out you sold is, what are you going to do now? Right? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to figure that out, but I ain't given that answer.
Yeah. Well, here's a question, and I'm glad that you kind of shared with us that, because that's the entrepreneur's journey. You've gone through the meat of it. Now you're on the back end, and most entrepreneurs will buy and sell lots of businesses as their time goes on, as their taste and appetite for things change. But I'm gonna pull back just a second, and I want to kind of go back to you were a business owner running a very successful operation, and there was things that you learned along that time frame that will apply to whatever this next step is in this next step in your journey. What are some of those things you could share with us that would help us kind of learn, man, this was a successful point? And maybe there were some times, there were some lessons that you said, man, now looking back on it, whatever I go into next, I will make sure I avoid doing that. Maybe it's just from the ownership perspective of the way you manage your time or manage the employees or whatever it may be. What are a few of those nuggets that you could share with us?
I think one thing that took me probably 5 or 6 years to learn in the car wash industry, honestly, really just came down to self-confidence, believing that I had what it takes to lead an organization. So those first 5-6 years, I think I led a lot out of fear. So just having, you know, surrounding myself with people that could speak encouraging words and just speak truth to me was really big and just helped me grow in my confidence as a leader. And then I think once I kind of grew in confidence, I was able to really just start making better decisions, I felt like. So that was one. And really at that point too, I think just realizing the caliber of people that I wanted to employ as my general managers. When you don't have a lot of confidence in your own leadership, I tend to probably hire the people that may not have been the best people to lead my stores. And I remember a distinct moment sitting around a room with all the guys that were leading my stores. We were actually in Guatemala together on a service project. And it was just like the Lord spoke to me and said, would you let any of your kids work for these guys?
Oh, wow.
No. You know, and I was just really convicted that I was creating a company that I wouldn't even want my kids to work for. And so I think that was a big turning moment for me in terms of who I started to hire, the culture we started to create. I never built this for my kids to run it, but I started just using that kind of as a question whenever I was going to hire somebody at the leadership level. You know, would I want my kids to come and work for these guys?
That is a great, great perspective, because hiring is such a difficult thing anyway. But that, I can imagine, just created a lot of clarity when you're sitting across from that person or on the phone with that person. Is that what you experienced?
Absolutely. Well, and I mean, listen, it's not like people grow up dreaming to be in the car wash industry, right? you really got to be proactive. We're in an industry where you have to be proactive to find top talent. And so that was kind of the moment where we started really putting a lot of weight on people's character, and not even the fact that did they have experience. I mean, we wanted people that we liked being around, that were good guys, and that we'd let our kids work for.
Is there something that you did that helped you identify that or attract those kind of people? Like you said, it's maybe difficult in that industry to attract top talent or whatever you may call it. So what did you do to help draw those kind of people to you?
Well, so the first thing I started doing, I prayed. I was like, all right, Lord, bring the people to me. Because, I mean, at that point, we had 5 stores, and 2 in Florida, 2 in Atlanta, 1 in Alabama. And then I just started asking friends and saying, look, you know, do you know anybody that's looking for a job? And I mean, within 6 months, we had every single position filled, and I didn't have to fire a single person. It just all worked out incredibly well.
Wow.
But then I just really started focusing on culture, and we hired a leadership coach, a guy named Jimmy Starnes, who not only coached me, but also started coaching our GMs. We went on a trip to Guatemala every year where we took our managers and eventually started taking our assistant managers as well to where we'd go and we'd do water filters and build homes. We sent married couples to Cancun and New York. And I mean, you know, we just really started investing in our people. It got to the point to where one guy left one time. They were moving to Portland. And, you know, he said, "Hey, I've got the perfect guy to replace me," you know? And so, I mean, he was excited about recruiting somebody else to come and work in his position. And sure enough, the guy that he connected me with turned out to be the best GM we ever had.
And then, isn't that awesome?
Hey, I got a brother who would love to come work for us. And so when we had an opening, his brother came to work for us. I mean, I just found if you start taking care of people, they're going to take care of you. And I think that's really kind of what we did decently well.
What amazing philosophy. And there's no wonder why you're successful, is that when you surround yourself with great people, it goes back to hiring. We've talked about hiring on the show plenty of times. We did something with a former campus outreach guy and Culture Index. And we've interviewed, you know, Justin Harris with Congruence, and all those things come back to investing in yourself, investing in the people and the business around you, the things that you can control. You can't control whether or not customers are going to show up for your car wash, but you can control the people that you're putting in there. And as those customers come, they're taken care of.
The user experience.
Yeah, they come back. I mean, it's amazing. We all go places and you interact with somebody at a counter, and it could be somebody just taking your order, and either they're the person who goes that makes you say, "Man, I always want to come back," or, "You know what? I really don't ever want to come back because of the way that person acted. And that just is so amazing for our business. Lots of lessons there. All right, a couple of quick things. So there was things that you were learning. You mentioned a leadership person that you guys hired. Was there any books, anything that you can look back on as a leader in the industry and business that you were reading that were just super impactful in your life?
That's a tough question. I'm not the biggest reader. I think I've got a couple of kids that are dyslexic, and I think they got it from me. So I can read a book and then not forget what it was about. So, man, I wish I had them in front. Oh, you know, I just read one it didn't really help me lead my company, but it's helping me kind of think through just kind of future. But it's called God Owns My Business by a guy named Stanley Tam. Been a really good book. I'm also reading, the books I'm reading now are probably deal more with generosity than leadership. I just feel like I'm kind of really trying to challenge myself and our family and that, you know, now that we've kind of exited a business and we're just trying to be good stewards of it. Mm. So if something comes to me, I'll chime back in.
Well, we're going to give you a chance to hopefully go through a Q&A with our community. And I'm sure all of those books that you have forgotten are going to come to you about 2:30 in the morning, and you're going to wake up and you're like, why have I had to remember these to interrupt my sleep?
Those books I read, I started reading them because Garrett has started reading them. I mean, he was one of the best self leaders I've been around, and I'm like, dang, I guess I better start reading because he's reading.
Well, I understand when we're business owners, it's so difficult to sit down and actually pick up a book. So I will confess, I am an audible listener.
Absolutely.
And 99% of everything that is consumed audibly for me.
I'm transitioning to that for sure.
So Jim, I don't want to miss this opportunity for folks that are listening. It sounds like there's a very heavy, intensive way to get into the car wash space. And even hearing some of the things you're saying now in terms of the environment may not be a good time to even try to enter in. But if somebody did want to be a part of this, but maybe in more of a passive role, are there opportunities like that? Are there people that are doing that sort of thing at this stage?
You know, I'm sure there are. All the guys that I know, I mean, what car washing is still a very segmented industry. So, like I said, private equity's come in. The largest car wash company in the U.S. is called Mr. Car Wash, and they have 270 locations. Think about that. That doesn't even compare to even like a Quick Trip or Chick-fil-A, who aren't even the biggest in their industry. So car washing is still very, you know, very, very segmented. And So how to get in to invest? I mean, you really need to know some. I would say at this point, you need to know somebody that's already in the industry that's looking to grow. There's not, I mean, there's a handful of new investors, but most new investors now aren't getting in the business just because it's so competitive.
So that's, you made me think of a question there. Like, I know obviously you've seen private equity and it's become much more competitive over the last handful of years. But if somebody would have, if Joey would have came to you 5 years ago and said, Jim, man, I have been watching what you're doing. I've had success in these different industries. I've got some cash. I want to help you expand this from 5 to 10. What would have made you say yes, if anything?
Yeah. I mean, I think finding the right property. I mean, there's a lot of challenges in the car wash industry. You walk into a government, you know, like walk into City Hall and say, hey, I want to build a car wash. Car washes are not viewed very well. It is hard to get zoning for a car washing.
Why is that?
Because I think a lot of government, I think a lot of people just have a bad perception of car washing from the standpoint of, you know, like there's one down the road from me that's a self-serve. I rode by there the other day, there's trash everywhere. The guy never comes and empties out the trash can. I think, you know, people think car washes waste a lot of water, so they're not good for the environment. But in fact, I mean, we use about the same amount of water as an average Starbucks. I think there's just a lot of misperceptions in the car wash industry.
Absolutely.
And that carry over into whether or not the city wants them there.
So I will say this. I know we're probably getting close to time, but someone comes to an investor, like somebody's listening to this and they've been approached by somebody says, hey, why don't you invest in this car wash? I've actually seen a couple of these offerings. And what questions would that person need to ask? Like, what would be important to that investor to ask to even see if it makes sense for them to invest?
Well, first off, I mean, if the person was already in the car wash business, they need to go and just experience that person's car wash. I mean, that's the number one thing, because you'll find out what your investment's going to look like in a couple years. But to me, it's about the operator. Who is the person running it? Can they be successful? Are they successful? Do you believe in that person? I mean, even now, as I'm thinking through kind of what to do next, I mean, it's obvious that so much of it for me is going to be more about investing in who and not the what, you know? So that's what I would say. I mean, car washing can be the best idea in the world, but I know some guys that have drove them into the ground, and next thing you know, a $3 million investment selling for $1.5 million.
It always comes back to people and systems. And like you said, it's investing in the who, and the ideas come and go, right? But the people that operate them can make them successful, and the systems are what going to keep them going. Jim, thank you so much for taking time to share with us. And man, I'm really excited to hear about what some of those new opportunities are going to come along. I hope you'll participate in the community. And if you're sitting there listening to this and you're like, man, just the wisdom pouring out of Jim on this podcast is awesome. And I want to be able to interact with him and see his journey and be able to ask him questions as maybe I'm trying to go down the same path. And whether it's car washes or any other industry that you're looking into, make sure you join our community, and you can get access to that at community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com and be able to take part not only in the live Q&A Jim is doing with us here shortly, but at the same time with others just like him that have not only run successful businesses, but are also now searching for new ones.
Thanks again for being on, man. I can't thank you enough for just sharing all of your experience, your wisdom. And man, we wish you best on your next endeavor for sure.
Well, guys, I really appreciate it. My kids are walking in the door right now, so this is like perfect timing, man. This is about to be a party up in here. But hopefully it was helpful, and I look forward to being on the Q&A with you guys in a couple weeks.
All right. Thank you, Jim.
Hey, thanks, guys.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand, so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.